Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick with the Feed the Fire podcast, and today we are recapping, as much as it will pain us to do so, the Chicago Fire 0-0 draw at Red Bull Arena this past weekend. We're also going to preview their match against Real Salt Lake, hopefully a favorable one coming back home against a Western Conference opponent, and we're going to throw in a few league headlines and catch you up on some MLS news as well. So for all of this and more, make sure you stay tuned. Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick again with the Feed the Fire podcast on Glass House Soccer. Thank you so much for joining me as we continue our conversation about our home team here, the Chicago Fire. But first, a few housekeeping things that we got to take care of. I want to first apologize for last week's episode. There were some technical difficulties. The wrong sound file got uploaded. So some of you just heard John Donovan's segment. It has since been rectified. So if you didn't get a chance to go back and listen to the full episode, go ahead and do so. I'd greatly appreciate it. I know the algorithm on Spotify would greatly appreciate it, so it can start pushing the show out to more listeners. And a big thanks to Tom for catching the tech error and reaching out to message me. Tom, I hope the trip to Cincinnati wasn't so miserable, given all the Cincinnati fans. Also, I am back to coaching my son's U8 soccer team. Got a bunch of first graders. We got the same team back as last year with the addition of a new player, so I'm excited to kind of take them to the next level. They look like they've been playing a lot this offseason, I'll say. A lot of schoolyard soccer for these kids, and we'll see if we can't get some good stories out of it this year. But let me know what you guys think. I had a number of my players play indoor soccer for a couple sessions here. What do you think about kids, 10 and under playing indoor soccer as much as maybe some of the kids are doing now, or just playing indoor soccer in general? I know for me as a kid, I think playing indoor from like second grade on really kind of contributed to some of the knee issues I have and I'm going to have. Now, maybe there's better turf, maybe there's better facilities, better cleats, all that stuff. Maybe there's better training and fitness as you get to the higher levels that I completely missed out on as a player. But I'm still a little hesitant of asking my son to play or asking if he wants to play indoor soccer, just because I don't want his knees to meet the same fate as mine. So let me know what you think at Glasshouse Soccer on all social media, and you can email me glasshousesoccer@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to look up Glasshouse Soccer on goals.tv for my 15-minute weekend recaps of all the scores and standings. Gives a big picture look at the league. And also, thank you to the Men in Red 97 podcasts for having me on as a special guest on their show, The Bonfire. We recorded it last night, Sunday night. So make sure you're going out and subscribing to them, not just for their podcast, which has great information and insight, but also for all the news they put out. They're a fully credentialed Chicago Fire press group. They're at the post-game shows. They had guys at the away matches. Like, go find and follow Men in Red 97. And again, what I think is great is having Men in Red 97 Media, having Feed the Fire, having CHGO Fire, having The Lantern and some of these other shows out there. On Tap Sportsnet and Chicago Sports Nation, everyone takes a different kind of approach to covering this team and covering the league, and you get different perspectives, you get different ideas. So you can't don't just stick, put your blinders on and focus in on my show or Men in Red or CHGO, whoever it is. Listen to all of it, you'll get different perspectives, and I think that's true for any news source, not just the Chicago Fire. Let me get off my soapbox, but again, thank you to Tim, Alan, DJ, everyone at Men in Red Media. It was a great time. And the last little note here, guys. Happy birthday to my wife. Just this past week, she turned another year older. Thought you were going to say the age there? No, not going to say the age there. But happy birthday to my wife. I love you, honey. Looking forward to many more years together. Now let's get into the Chicago Fire part of the show, the big part, the big game against first place Red Bulls going into the opposition arena and coming back with a point. What do you know, Chicago Fire fans? We pulled a point off on the road against the number one team in the league, and why do we feel so miserable about it? Now for me, Not this wasn't a story of two halves, right? It's not a tale of two halves. This was two different games, but in two halves of play. That first half to me was a very typical away team strategy where the away team is not as good as the home team, right? The Chicago Fire go to Red Bull Arena. They kind of absorb the pressure from Red Bull that first 15, 20 minutes. Then they get into some defensive rhythm, they build a little possession, maybe they pick a few chances to send a long ball or to do some overlapping runs. A lot of great overlapping runs with Mueller and Aragone. It was just a little bit off. I really would like to see whoever ends up playing on that left consistently for the Fire with Mueller start to develop a good rapport. Because there were times when Aragone would play the ball forward to Mueller and would go to make that overlapping run on the outside, like over the touchline, over the sideline. And Mueller was already so wide that sometimes Aragone didn't know if he should go around him or if he should cut through the middle of the field. And it was a little difficult at times working a give and go. But the couple of times that it worked for them, the Fire were able to create some good chances. And right before he got subbed off, Mueller created probably the Fire's best scoring opportunity or one of their best scoring opportunities when he was able to play a cross in. Kuypers gets ahead on it, but just can't find the back of the net with it. So I like that Mueller is starting to kind of get a little more confidence, especially as a starter. And as we've seen, his last two matches starting, the Chicago Fire are spreading the field out a lot more. If you look at the passing charts, especially those at MLS Stat on Twitter, you will see that the Fire are spread out and not as tight in the middle of the field, and they're able to pull defenders out and maybe create some more space for the runners in, like Kuypers, like Kutsias, Barlow if he gets in, maybe some of the CF2 players if they get a call up. If they can stretch the field to the left, does that mean Haile Selassie can make a run in from the right, as you know he likes to do, or Gutierrez even at the top of the box? We will see. But it's starting to come together, at least in that sense. But again, we talked about Mueller's getting the start. As far as the starting lineup, though, and here's a few, we're going to kind of look at a few storylines from this game. The first one was the starting lineup. It was the exact same starting lineup as the week before, the 2-1 victory against Houston. And I think the coaching staff is just thinking, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Let's just run it back out, rinse and repeat, run it back, pick your kind of phrase that applies here. The problem is it barely worked versus Houston. And the Fire coaching staff seem to be equating the results of the match with their team's performance. Because they're if you look at the game against Montreal, if you look at the game against Houston, you know, the Klopas comes out in his post game saying how great the team played and this is all this good stuff. But they didn't play great. I don't think they've played great in any game this year. Maybe the season opener at Philadelphia, they played a pretty good game. We saw Gutierrez have his best game of the season by far. And shocking that when your central midfielder has a great game, that the rest of the team looks fairly good too. And they were still acclimating Kuypers and Acosta at that time. So that should have been the low bar, and you build on that. But that hasn't been the case. But yet the coaching staff's like, let's just run it back. Now, part of what we talked about with on the Bonfire with Men in Red podcast was, well, is it the coaching staff who, you know, just they don't know what they're looking at, they don't know how to coach these guys, like they're making the wrong decisions with the players, they don't know how to motivate them either? Or is it just the roster still isn't built out the way that they need it to be, and so it doesn't matter if you start Mueller and Selassie, it doesn't matter if you start Gutierrez and Shaqiri and throw Herbers in the middle, like you're going to get the same play. It doesn't matter if you're starting Acosta next to Jimenez, Navarro, or Pineda. It doesn't matter if you've got Salquist, Chijos, Turan, or Pineda as your center back options. And if you look at the outside backs, well, you've got Aragone and Dean, who are two right backs who have played left back most of the season because of the Gutman and Gasper injuries. And now Suquet's back, and he's playing meh, okay enough, I guess. So is it the coaching staff who is not getting the best out of these players, or is it the players who just aren't at the talent level or at that click, they haven't clicked with each other yet, they're not trying maybe, they're the criticism falls on the players, whatever it may be, right? Those are kind of the two ideas. Now, personally, I think it's the coaching staff. I think they are not getting the most out of their players tactically, motivationally, and as well as any of the other intangibles that you can put on them. You know, they have not figured out in 3 years how to get Gutierrez and Shaqiri playing well together, unless that is one of them starts on the bench. They still have not figured out how to play high percentage crosses into their forwards. Kamara wasn't scoring, Shabilko wasn't scoring, Kutsius wasn't scoring, now Kuipers still isn't scoring. So I think that the coaches have these same tactics that they don't know how to put on the team, or they don't know how to get from the team, and it's the same negative results. So I think it's on coaching, and this is one of the storylines that we're going to see throughout the season. Maybe you're going to see a different storyline if something comes in to shake up this coaching staff. Again, I doubt it. I think it's Klopas until the front office gets their top choice to replace him. And maybe they didn't even have a good choice, and that's why he ended up with the job. And no one's going to come out and say that, well, we couldn't get anybody, so it was Frank again. You know, they're not going to disrespect him like that, which fine. But that's like the one big storyline, is that win, lose, or draw, the Chicago Fire are playing the exact same type of not very good soccer. And you saw it in the second half. The first half, again, it followed that away team script. Weather the first 15 to 20, start to settle into the game with some possession, start to counterattack. The second half, when you are now up a man because of Reyes' stupid red card that he picked up when he punched Sahlquist in the face. It was like he was trying to like do a little hand check and see where Sahlquist was on the set piece, but instead he said, well, I could do a little hand check, or I could just reach back and punch him in the face. And that's what he ended up doing. And from what I've been hearing from some Red Bull fan shows, is that Reyes is good for that on occasion. Solid player, and then has those mental lapses every few games or so. So now the Chicago Fire are up a man in the 42nd minute. And also, during all of that VAR check to see, because initially it was a yellow card, they VAR checked it to see if it was reckless misconduct, intentional, malicious, all that stuff, which the referee deemed it was, and it looked like the right call, especially on the replay, when you see Reyes's hand not go outward to try and, like I said, hand check, find where the other player is, but he's got a closed fist and it actually comes up. It was like one of those karate movies where the last bad guy is sneaking up on the hero and he just throws his hand up over his shoulder, which and just like hits him in the face and you don't see it coming. That's what Reyes did to Sahlquist here. So it was, I think, an appropriate use of VAR and a good red card issued by the referee. But during all that check, and then during Sahlquist being checked for a concussion, was subbed out as part of the concussion protocol. We see Dante Van Zier get subbed out for Red Bulls. And I haven't seen exactly what's happened to him, but now you've got the league leader in assists out of the match for Red Bull. You have them down a man, down one of their defenders, I think. I forget exactly where Reyes played on the pitch. The Fire should be taking advantage of this, not regressing. What I expected, and what I think a lot of fans expected, was then for the Fire to come out in that second half and really run at this Red Bull team, who, to their credit, extremely well coached to all of a sudden go from playing their style of soccer in the first half to we got to start to play a lot more defensively and pick our counterattacks going forward, or we're going to drop 3 points at home here against Hugo Kuipers. So they played excellent defense and actually had the best opportunities of that second half, barring the Kuipers cross from Mueller and Kutsius kind of blundering over a ball. And sidebar here on Kutsius, as much as I love the young striker, not just because he's Greek, but I think he has got a lot of tools to really develop into one of several different kinds of strikers. He can hold up, he can press, he can be a target guy. Like, he's just got to start finishing. I don't know how many times he has like wrong-footed himself, where the ball is on his left foot and he's trying to shoot it with the right foot, or vice versa, or the ball just takes an awkward hop up and he can't get a shot off, and then the defender or goalie will come up and make a block or a save. It's starting to become a habit where I can't just say it's oh, unlucky bounce type of thing, or oh, his teammate should have passed it to the front foot instead of playing it a little behind him, or whatever it is, right? It's starting to happen more frequently or frequently enough that it might be a problem with Kutsias, and I hate to say that. And I'd really like to see him kind of resurrect his game in a couple weeks, especially with Yakumakis coming to town on the 27th. A couple of Greek strikers, I think that would go a long way to getting his confidence back. Seeing how Kutsias is playing with one of the Greek youth teams, the under-19s, and Yakumakis playing and scoring for the Greek senior team, that could bring a little something extra out of Kutsias. So I hope he can find something, a little momentum to build off of in this RSL game, and then maybe get an opportunity against Atlanta and his fellow countrymen there. Also, he's going to get a chance against fellow countrymen against RSL. We'll talk about that in the RSL preview. But we saw in the second half of this Red Bull game that the Fire played that same kind of let's knock the ball around and pass, but without any sort of purpose and not be able to find anything creatively. Also, the big story, another big storyline, Jerdan Shaqiri's inability to play offense. Every first touch on the ball, go back and look for it. And I will say this confidently, and I haven't watched the game a second time to verify it, but I will say it confidently. Every time Shaqiri received the ball, his first touch was backwards. And Calen Carr even recognized it on the broadcast that Shaqiri was pushing the ball backwards. So he was really slowing the game down. It's one thing if he is lobbing balls forward. I've been critical of him for lobbing balls forward because he's almost playing it before his striker can get into a good position. And he's playing balls too soon. He's not drawing defenders to him. So not only is his touch is bad this game, but over the course of the season, his distribution forward has been poor as well. He really slowed things down, and Red Bull should have won it off of a Shaqiri blunder in that second half when they hit two posts in three shots in quick succession. Because it was Shaqiri receiving the ball at the center of the pitch, dribbling backwards three or four touches, realizing he screwed up, has nowhere to go, can't play it back to his center backs because of the high press of the Red Bull, can't dribble around whoever's defending him, and because he's going backwards, he is taking himself away from the wingers that are trying to get in position, receive a pass. So what does he do? He goes down, tries to draw a foul, and I think the referee in this case correctly does not award it, which then it's a 3-on-2 for the Red Bulls. We know the Chicago Fire's transition defense isn't that good. The shot is away. Brady does his best to reach out. I don't think he got a fingertip on it, and I don't know if this ball was on the inside of the post if he saves it, but it hits the post. Then the shot comes in, the follow-up shot, Brady makes the save, the ball rolls out, and then there's a third shot, all within the span of like 30, 45, maybe a minute, 30, 45 seconds, maybe a minute, where then that shot hits the other post. And by the way, the Chicago Fire Woodwork had three saves in this match. Chris Brady had five. So, as much as I am so happy the Fire get their first clean sheet, it was three saves by the post, and Red Bull were playing a man down for like 60 minutes of this match. So that to me is the overarching thing of what happened with the Chicago Fire. It was two games, two mini games within one. A typical first half for a struggling away team, the inferior away team. And then when they go up with a man advantage, they play that same brand of whatevering soccer, where they're just passing the ball around without any real purpose, without trying to probe the defense or kind of generate some sort of offense. The other thing, and John Donovan did not send me a recap. He's getting ready for some travel. So safe travels, John. Enjoy all the soccer matches wherever you're headed. You'll have to let us know how it is when you return. I won't give anything more away than that. But John and I did talk on the phone yesterday, and he said the Red Bulls took away Shaqiri's left foot. When he's trying to run parallel to the goal and make those little bumper passes off of the wings on the outside and the center forwards in the middle and try and open something up with his left foot, they were almost overcommitting to his left foot and took that away from him, forcing him to go backwards. And a player of Shaqiri's talent, I hear, supposedly, should be able to overcome that and either play a good pass or make a cut and take a guy one-on-one, but we have not seen it. One of the other storylines were the substitutions, that the substitutions did nothing to positively change the game. They, in fact, slowed things down because we saw in the second half there was even less urgency and less opportunity for the Chicago Fire. giving the coaching staff the benefit of the doubt here, there were injuries to Sahlquist. There were cards that may have affected it, right? Acosta picked up a yellow card. Martin Haile Selassie looks like he pulled up with some tightness, so he had to be subbed out. So if those players did not need to be subbed out due to injuries or yellow cards, it's possible that we see some different substitutions. But again, you saw a lot of subs, and there were no positive effects to this match. All right. We've talked about how we're in a Groundhog Day loop here, a Bill Murray-esque Groundhog Day loop with kind of the same thing over and over. I wanted to maybe suggest that Gutierrez isn't the star player we think he is, and I'm going to hold off on that for this week. I want to see, does he need a better mentor? Does he need a better coach? Or is he really just going to be a best sub? Is he best suited to be a sub in MLS, at least right now? Definitely the talk of him going to Europe has subsided, that's for sure. So maybe we'll talk about that more in the future. One other thing, speaking of kind of developing talent here, another storyline that I want to keep an eye on with this Chicago Fire team is a lack of competition at the first team. I don't understand why Javi Casas, Misiel Rodriguez, Sergio Orejel have not gotten any minutes this season. We are now 8 matches in, 9 matches in. I think this was match day 9, eighth game played for the Fire. We have had very, very minimal offensive creativity and offensive threat. Why not give these guys a start? The philosophy of integrating young players is you don't want to put them all in at once. You don't want to just put them in junk minutes. You want to give them meaningful minutes one at a time. That way you don't have to, I don't mean this to be negative, but that way the level of play of your team doesn't drop, right? If you're going to put in 4 bench players to start a game, you're going to have a lot worse of an outcome than 1 player. Plus, they're not going to be able to kind of see how the first team operates. So I think you really need to start getting Casas, Rodriguez, and Orejel some minutes, meaningful minutes, where they can start to play with some of these first teamers and play against some of the opposition first teamers. And what's the worst that can happen? The Fire keep not scoring goals? I think there needs to be some competition for the development side, but also to light a fire. Yes, I said it, light a fire underneath these starters. They look too complacent. They look too comfortable, especially across the midfield. Selassie, Shaqiri, Herbers. Those guys, who's going to take their spot right now? Selassie is having a very, very poor season. He is not playing to his potential. He's not playing to even what he did last year. And he is not trying to work with Hugo Kuypers, that's for sure. He is a shoot-first winger, which normally would be okay, which might be okay with some teams. But you know what? You just paid $12 million for this striker who can finish anything in and around the box. Get him the ball, Selassie. So maybe if you bring in one of these young guys to take some minutes from Selassie, maybe not even a start, but just, say, all right, Selassie, it's 60 minutes, in comes Casas, and then we'll take it from there and see what happens, right? Last little thing, maybe I'm reading this in too much because I like criticizing the coaching staff. The Chicago Fire's website did not put out any sort of quote sheets from Klopas or any players post-game, and Tim from Men in Red 97 Media said that this was the most frustrated he has ever seen Klopas at a post-game presser. So I wonder if those are related. I don't know. Or maybe they just haven't put it out yet because it is Monday night. But if that's the case, what have they been doing for the last 48 hours? So those are all kind of the big storylines. Let's jump into the stats of the match, as I like to do, and do the statistics match the eye test, and what can they tell us about this Fire game? Well, this was the Fire's best match of the season by far from a statistical percentage, or from a statistical standpoint. If you just ignore the fact that they didn't score any goals here, they had 58% possession. I think this is the first game they actually had the majority of possession. 8 shots, 3 on goal. That's not good. They've had better games than that. But 637 total passes with a 90.4% passing accuracy. That is absolutely bonkers for the Chicago Fire. 637 passes, maybe the most total passes they have had since I've started doing this podcast over a year ago, and probably since I started tracking their passing and stats, even going back to my Sons of a Pitch soccer days prior to starting Feed the Fire. I have never seen this Fire team with 637 passes, let alone 90% passing accuracy. Now, typically, when you see anything in the 80s, especially like the mid-80s, you think that they're passing the ball around a lot in the defensive third, where there's not a lot of pressure. But for the Red Bull, who like to play a higher line, like to counter-press and press, like the Fire really took advantage of them being down a man to hold the ball in the defensive and middle third of the field and to work the ball kind of on in the wings, in the corner spaces, in the channels, if you will. But again, the Red Bulls were very content to let the Fire pass the ball around and say, go ahead, try to do something that you haven't done all season and actually break down a defense and play some probing balls in, play some good through balls or some crosses to your striker. And they called the Fire on it, and the Fire could not answer. So yeah, 90.4% passing accuracy and no goals to show for it. Three shots on goal. Now the Red Bulls ended up with 80% passing on 313 passes. So, you know, when they had the ball, they made the most of it. They also had 17 shots, five on goal. Kind of ridiculous that the Fire, again, with 637 passes, only had eight shots. Fire had four corners, 18 total crosses, which is on the higher side of things this season, four offside calls against them. Brady came up with five saves, and like I said, the post also had three more, eight clearances, seven fouls, and two yellow cards for the Fire. Here's the advanced offensive stats. Total team expected goals, Chicago Fire, 0.8. You were a man up for 60 minutes, and the opposing team and MLS league leader in assists, Dante Van Zier, was out for about 60 minutes of that game. And the Fire had 0.8 XG, the Red Bulls still had 2.1. That's all you need to know. Here's a little bit more on the passing numbers. This is something from at MLS Stats on Twitter. Chicago Fire passes into the final third, 34 to Red Bull 60. Passes in the final third, so not just into, but within the final third, passes occurring within the final third, Chicago Fire 53, Red Bulls 119. Passes into the opposing box, Fire 9, Red Bulls 10. So, again, the Chicago Fire love passing around the opposing goal, but never actually into dangerous areas there. If you like the zone 14 idea, it's that zone it's the area of the field that's just outside of the opposition's 18-yard box. The idea is, or the theory is, if you make passes in and out of that box, you have such a higher percent chance of it leading to a shot, or it would be a key pass, right? I think that idea of zone 14 and tracking the passes in and out of there has turned into the idea of key passes, turned into that statistic. But again, the Chicago Fire are passing it around. They're not using that zone to stage an attack into the opposing's team's box or to shoot from. They're just using it almost as a lateral highway. All right. Oh, here's my last note. So when it comes to offense, the Fire are just a big tease. Yes, they just tease. They play with the balls and don't do anything with it. All right. On that note, we're going to take our sponsor break here. I'd like to recognize Skira Icelandic Spring Water as the official sponsor of the Feed the Fire podcast. Been with us since day one, and we really do appreciate it. But as the show continues to grow, we are looking for other sponsorship opportunities. So please contact me at glasshousesoccer@gmail.com if you would like to support the show financially and, you know, promote yourself or your brand through our channels. But Skira Icelandic Spring Water, like I said, from here with us from day one, and Icelandic for clear, Skira water comes from a spring and a government-protected nature preserve in Iceland with naturally low mineral content. This isn't your average water. Clearly, pun intended, it's one of the best. And with things warming up here in the Chicagoland area, and hopefully for you around the country, Go out to your local 7-Eleven, grab a couple, three bottles of Skyr, have it with you. Keep one at the office, one in the car, one in the fridge at home. Hopefully keep it next to your beers in your mini fridge in my office. I know that's where I got mine. I'm gonna look over there here. Make sure you're stocked up on Skyr. Stay hydrated this spring and summer. As I mentioned, John Donovan, who's not with us, he's traveling, so he did not get his segment in. But again, we know that the Fire did not perform well, and I think he would just be kind of repeating a lot of what the fans saw and what we have talked about here, as well as his thoughts on Gutierrez not being that star that the Fire had built him up to be over the last couple seasons. So now we look ahead to next week's matchup against Real Salt Lake, April 20th on the lakefront here in Chicago, back home to Soldier Field. Let's take a look at the competition here. RSL, Real Salt Lake, have 3 wins, 2 losses, and 3 draws on the season. That's good enough for 12 points, and currently sitting fourth in the Western Conference standings. They are eighth in the overall league standings, the Supporters Shield standing. So, top third of the league here, right? Having a decent start to the season, not really doing anything flashy other than a match where Arango had a hat trick, but they're grinding out their points. And they are going to, I think, bring that same attitude to Chicago and try and grind out at the very least a draw. They're on a 4-game point streak, most recently drawing Columbus 0-0 in Salt Lake City. So they've had most recent run of form, draw, draw, win, win. So they're playing some good football, playing some good soccer here. RSL lines up typically in a 4-2-3-1 formation. They have in their last 3 matches. And in their last match, these were their starters. Zach McMath in goal. 4-man back line with Alexandros Katranis. And there's the Greek matchup. Let's see Koutsias and Katranis going after each other there. So Katranis, Brian Vera, Justin Glad, and Andrew Brody along the back. Defensive midfielders Amika Anelie and Brian Ojeda. Attacking midfielders Diego Luna, Matt Crooks, Andres Gomez. And their star striker up front, Christian Chicho Arango, who a lot of us became familiar with for his days with LAFC. He took a spell to go to another team. I forget if he ended up going to Liga MX for a bit or elsewhere. And then he is now back in MLS with RSL. The two big names are obviously Diego Luna and Chicho Arango, excuse me, my apologies to the striker. Don't score 3 goals against us now because I did that. Diego Luna, up and coming youth player for the men's national team, as well as a budding MLS star. You can pick him out by all of his tattoos, but also you can pick him out for his ability to pick out his attackers. He is tied for second in assists in MLS. He's got 5 assists on the season. We said Dante Van Zier has 6. He's leading the league. And then Diego Luna and a handful of other players have 5 assists. So look for him to be the focal point as they transition from defense to offense. And Chicho Arango is tied for the league lead with 6 goals. Again, he had 3 in 1 game, so that's kind of weighting his average a little higher there. However, we know he can score. He's also second and third in the league in shots and shots on goal. So it's not just like he's making these little through runs or cleaning up stuff around the box. He will shoot if you give him an inch of space. Second in the league in shots, third in the league in shots on goal. I think he's behind Denny Bouanga of LAFC in both of those categories. RSL coached by MLS great Pablo Mastroianni, again, who has a celebrated playing career, played in college NC State. Senior career, Tucson Amigos back in 95, played for the Miami Fusion from 98 to 2001, then was with the Rapids from 2002 to 2013. That is where everyone knows him and where he made his name. 225 appearances with the Rapids, then spent a final season with the Galaxy. He also had 65 appearances for the U.S. men's national team, including a World Cup appearance. He has coached the Rapids, the Dynamo, as an assistant, and then worked his way up with RSL as an assistant interim coach and now as the head coach. So Mastroianni, Definitely someone we got to talk about whenever we talk about this RSL team. And here's a little bit of his MLS trivia, something you can take to the sports bars around your area. In 2021, Pablo Mascherani's number 25 was retired by the Colorado Rapids. The first number retired by the Colorado Rapids. So there's your trivia with him. Looking at RSL from a statistical standpoint, they are an above average MLS team in most offensive categories. They are sixth in the league in total number of shots, like we mentioned with Arango, but they are the fifth worst team in the league in shots on target percentage. So while they are racking up a lot of shots, a small percentage of them are actually on goal. That could be useful for the Chicago Fire if they can keep the RSL Strikers outside the box, if they can force them into some difficult long-range shots. However, we've seen the Fire struggle in transition defense. What's going to give in this match? The majority of their passes are medium to long passes, so the Fire center backs are going to need to be locked in for a full 90 minutes on these RSL attackers, something maybe they've had a little bit of trouble for. But if Teran is back from his red card suspension and feeling fit, then he could be a guy to rely on. Now, I don't know if we're going to be able to rely on him for a full 90, both fitness-wise and mentality-wise, but we'll see how it plays out. Defensively, most of RSL's tackles come in the middle third of the pitch. So I haven't watched them play a lot this season, but given that statistic, given the fact that they like to play a lot of medium to long balls, that suggests to me that defensively they sit in kind of a mid-block, if you will, that their line of confrontation is a little bit higher up the field than other teams who like to sit much more defensively low block, like we've seen the Chicago Fire play on the road in some early games this season, where they kind of sit closer to the 18-yard box line rather than, let's say, the edge of the center circle, right around there. I expect RSL to continue to do that. Look for some good counterattacking opportunities against the Fire, or look for some build-up play right through the middle of the field then. Again, it's kind of typical for a 4-2-3-1 formation, which means then that the Fire are going to need a great game from their defensive midfielders, from Acosta, from whoever else is next to him, Jimenez, Herbers, Navarro, Pineda. The center backs are going to have to be ready to step up if needed, and the outside backs are going to have to be able to pinch in if needed. So we're going to need a full team effort on defense if the Fire are turning the ball over in the middle third, or if RSL starts to really build their attacks out of that middle third. All that being said, my prediction for the game. I'm not confident in any prediction of the Chicago Fire. I really don't know how anyone could be so confident about any MLS team, you know, 8-9 games into it, because they've fluctuated wildly with goals scored, results, this and that. I don't think there's a team that you can say is, yes, they are definitively the best team, hands down, in the league right now. I mean, Red Bull had the spot until Miami did it. There's still questions around Miami. Columbus, extremely talented team. What's going on with Cucho? Like no one's been rolling through the league thus far. I'll put it that way. But for the Chicago Fire, their offense is so stagnant. I don't know if they're going to score zero or one goals, or if they're going to end up with a 3 or 4 goal performance. They had that fluky 4 goal game with the wind and the miracle of Kellen Acosta, right? The Windy City miracle there. I really want Kuipers to get going. I want to see Mueller crossing in. I want to see Gutierrez shooting. I want to see Shaqiri with a couple good free kicks, right? If that happens, the Fire could bang 2, 3, 4 goals in on a given night, but they just haven't done it yet. So that's why I'm never confident predicting a Fire result here. But my underlying philosophy in MLS is you are what you are until you're not. So the Fire are not an offensive team until they show me that. So again, even though I'm not confident, I'm thinking this is going to end up a 1-1 draw on a cool night on the lakefront. Again, the Fire's offense isn't there, but they are home. They get a little bump. RSL, I think, is going to play conservatively. They're going to be okay with a point on the road against a non-conference opponent. And I think that's how they're going to play it. Now, I could be wrong about RSL's approach to the match. I think they could say, wow, the Fire are struggling. We can go steal 3 points here. This is a big opportunity for us, especially for the other Western Conference teams that aren't playing Chicago this season. We can really snatch some points from the other conference compared to our in-conference rivals. However, the one thing working in the Chicago Fire's favor is they usually have a good record against Western Conference opponents. So, on the one hand, I'm going to predict a 1-1 draw, but on the other hand, would surprise me if the Fire win 3-1. I hope that happens. I hope I am surprised by that. And that's where we'll leave the preview for the RSL match. Now, a few things to catch you up on going around the league. There was a recent Board of Governors meeting where they are proposing some rule changes to the Chicago to Major League Soccer's roster rules that are reportedly going to take effect this summer. There's three rules here. Paul Tenorio at The Athletic had really taken the lead on this. There's an article by Jeff Carlisle on ESPN kind of talking about it as well. But really, it's all about giving options and roster flexibility to the front office. Teams now will have multiple ways to construct a roster rather than just saying you get three DPs, you get a U22, here's your salary cap, here's your GAM. So here's the first proposed change. I forget if it had been approved yet. It has not been approved yet by the MLS Players Association, has been approved by the MLS Board of Governors. So the first change, you will have the option of three designated players and three U22 initiative players, or two designated players and four U22 initiative players, up to $2 million in GAM. So you can have that extra U22 and a little extra money, or you get your three DPs and your three U22s. So this could appeal to quote unquote small market, low spending teams. And it could appeal to some really creative front offices who maybe have scouting networks who are built towards younger players rather than trying to sign a prime player on a DP contract from overseas. So it gives you some options and flexibility there. The other change is that teams will be given two contract buyouts during the season, not just one. And people in Chicago Fire media, social media are saying, "Oh, good, we can buy out Shaqiri and send him to Lugano now. We got a second buyout." I don't think that's going to happen. I think that is just, if you're getting rid of Shaqiri, you're going to be rebuilding. And at this point, they don't want to spend that much more money on rebuilding their entire midfield, even though they're going to have to do that in the near future. But that's one choice of it. The other choice is probably Souquet, to get him off the books. But then again, with the struggles and injuries on the outside back positions, maybe he's got some value now just by the fact that he's a fairly competent outside back. But yes, two contract buyouts per season. And the third change is you will get a maximum of $3 million in general allocation money, GAM, on transfer revenue per year. So how does this affect transfers? If you sell a player for, an $8 million transfer fee, you can only realize 1.2 million of that in general allocation money. General allocation money can be spent on anything, player salaries, wherever it is within your organization. So you were only able as a team to get 1.2 million of that. Now you can get up to 3 million of that with your transfers. So for teams who maybe aren't transferring players in the millions and tens of millions of dollars, this gives you the opportunity to maybe to transfer a couple more of your youth players or kind of some of your starters maybe who still have some value overseas in the transfer market. And then build up a little bit more of a cash flow going from 1.2 to 3 million. It's not going to affect big spending teams like, say, the Fire, who will spend and who will have a transfer of 5, 6, 7, $8 million every year or so, hopefully, or in Atlanta, let's say. But it really could help a team like, say, a San Jose, who's going to bring a few academy prospects up and then send them out overseas, perhaps. So that is kind of what's going on there. What's spurring all of this? Obviously, it's the evolution of MLS, right? But also in the news, and maybe it's a coincidence, after Inter Miami gets knocked out by Monterrey from CONCACAF Champions Cup, Tata Martino comes out and says, we need more flexible roster rules to compete with Liga MX and to compete with other clubs around the world. We just can't compete with it. And there was a quote from a coach last year, I forget who it was, who said, "We're playing with three designated players. The Mexican teams are playing with 11 designated players, plus a few more on the bench." That is the disparity between it. And even now, if MLS starting 11s maybe can compete with Liga MX starting 11, well, when you get to the last 20, 30 minutes of the game and you get four or five subs into that match, they have quality depth, quality bench players, as opposed to MLS rosters who are just kind of floating guys between MLS Next Pro and the senior team to fill the roster spots. So the fact that they're saying that all of this now and these roster changes, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? The losses to Liga MX or the demands for roster flexibility, right? So those are things to consider. Part of it too, you got to always put this out there, is that the roster need to be flexible, they need to be deeper, they need to allow for more spending, because with all the games that MLS clubs play, they need to have more and better players available to them. Excuse me. They need to have more players available to them and players of a better quality available to them. And the argument is, well, they're the ones creating their own fixture congestion, right? Anyway, that is everything I wanted to talk about this week. And that was a lot to talk about, even without John Donovan's segment. So I want to thank you all for staying tuned throughout all of this. If you have any thoughts you want to get off your chest, you can email me, glasshousesoccer@gmail.com. You can find me on social media at glasshousesoccer. DMs, messages are open. Please make sure you like, share, subscribe, leave some ratings. If you're on podcasts, I'm on Spotify, Good Pods, iTunes. Any sort of sharing and promoting the show to your friends, family, colleagues, teammates, whoever it is, definitely goes a long way in helping us grow the show, grow the sport through conversation. I look forward to seeing everyone out in the South Lot against the RSL. By the way, it's Zach Thornton induction into the Ring of Fire. So there will be a ceremony there. Get there early, get your Zach Thornton bobbleheads. And I look forward to having a beer with everybody in the South Lot with some of the supporters. Come out and find me. And as always, let's go Fire.